Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week.
This one is coming from Jason, who I can tell must be a military person by the very respectfully, what do you call that? Closing, trying to remember the stupid name that I had to memorize for that in sixth grade or whatever it was.
I know anyway, what you're talking about though. Yeah. Yeah.
Army dudes always say VR. So that's what
Jason. Very respectfully. Yeah. Yep. Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Jason and I am an active duty army officer.
Sorry, Jason. We were just doing an episode of Thinking LSAT and we were laughing about people putting my name is blank into the first sentence of their email. It's funny when people do that because we know who emailed us, but
anyway. Okay. Yeah. My name is Jason and I'm an active duty army officer. I discovered your podcast approximately 3 weeks ago and I've already listened to 30 plus episodes. Thus, I aim to avoid comma splices and other grammar mistakes in this email. I currently have an LSAT Demon free account.
Okay. So Jason is setting the bar high for his own email by saying he aims to avoid comma splices and other grammar mistakes.
Yeah, now you're like inviting us to like look for those things. If you just like did it.
Drawn way. I can tell you at a glance, Jason, you're abusing the bold and underline. You've got bold in this next sentence. And then later you've got bold and underline at the same time on three different questions, which we appreciate actually, because this email is kind of long, but, okay. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm interested in applying to law school this fall, 2022. Moreover, my primary goal is to quote, not pay for law school. Okay, good. Great. Unfortunately, I will not qualify for nearly enough GI Bill or Army education benefits to pay for law school. Specifically, my GI Bill benefits will likely cover $15,000 per year. All right. So if you can get a full ride at some school, you might be able to, you know, get that extra money and get a bonus, right? Get some money to go to law school. Is that how that works?
In some cases, I don't know.
I've used the LSAT Demon Scholarship Estimator, so I generally understand what LSAT UGPA combination is required to obtain a full ride to most schools.
By the way, that's at LSATdemon.com/scholarships, and everyone, really everyone, should look at that. LSATdemon.com/scholarships. If nothing else, it's the fastest way to get to all the 509 reports. Because the little PDF logo has the 509s directly for every single school. But yeah, man, you can get yourself 100 something different estimates from the public data by just putting in your LSAT and GPA. Mm-hmm. It's a no-brainer to go check that tool out.
Jason continues, I'm relatively new to the LSAT and the law school admissions process. However, I took a diagnostic LSAT 3 weeks ago and scored a 160. Okay, nice. That's a pretty damn good diagnostic score. Yep. In the weeks following my diagnostic test, I have been solely focusing on improving my performance on the logic game section because I am not yet perfect on that aspect of the test. I wouldn't suggest focusing solely on games.
Yeah, for 3 weeks of just doing games? I mean, you're not perfect on the other sections either, Jason. Like, games is the section that I believe you should perfect before you apply. Like, if you're not perfect yet, it's because you haven't done the work. Everybody can get perfect on the games if you do the work. So do the work. And Jason drank that Kool-Aid, which is amazing. Like, thank you, Jason, for following our advice. But yeah, I would mix in, hey, one section a week of LR, one section a week of reading comp.
Yeah, if not more. I mean, I don't know how well he's performing in those other sections. My probably default assumption is, shake it up, keep it relatively even.
Yeah, Google, check out my blog post, 1 hour LSAT. If you search for like 1 hour LSAT Demon, or you'll guaranteed find it. But it was a proposed study schedule for what to do if you want to spend 1 hour a day. And it was like, and if you have a particular weakness in a particular area, like Jason does in games, well, then you could add it. You could add to it. You could supplement it. with additional, excuse me, additional games.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's also assuming that this is his weak section. He says he's doing it because he's not perfect there yet. He still could be doing better in games than the other two. So I don't know enough to really say.
This guy's a badass.
Yeah. His next sentence, my UGPA is a 4.0 on LSAC's scale. My undergraduate major was biology, which is great. That's no walk in the park. My target LSAT score is a 170.
Nope. No, it's not.
It's higher than that. For yeah, sure.
Your target LSAT is as high as you can get, Jason. And as high as you can get is probably 180. I mean, yeah. Nobody like it's kind of ridiculous to shoot for 180 because, you know, what is it? One out of 1,000 or something. Get yeah. it. And it's not necessary because 170, let's say 177.
Just to be does safe. Sure.
All of the job of a 180. And at most schools, you know, a 170, anything is going to be doing all of the job of a 180. But certain schools are not most schools. And you might, who knows? Dude, you could go to Yale. You could go to Harvard. You could go to Stanford. Are you fucking kidding me? STEM 4.0 military experience.
Yeah.
With a 177, I'd be like, you need to blanket the top 14 or pick and choose even. Like, don't, you know, the places you would never go. Don't apply, but oh my God, your offers are going to be incredible.
I would still consider applying if not to get their offers and then use them as negotiation and yeah. People change their minds. I mean, anyways, Jason continues. I'm planning on signing up for the September 2022 LSAT, which means I would have approximately 70 days to study for the test. Bold and underlined. Do you think 70 days is enough time to study for the LSAT and obtain my target score?
I just don't know. Oh, read the next sentence.
I work full time, but I assess it is possible for me to study at least 1 hour per day during the work week and 3 to 4 hours on the weekend. I think it can be accomplished. I don't think it's an unreasonable goal. Sometimes people write in and they have aspirations that just seem highly unlikely. I don't think this is highly unlikely. I think you could achieve a high 170 score within 70 days. You're already at 160, which means so much of this test is already intuitive to you, but you won't know until you start studying and taking practice tests and doing drilling. And yeah, so just work toward it. If you make it, great. If you don't, shoot for October.
Yeah. And also, I don't know. He's asking very specific questions about a very specific goal on a very specific timeline. And we're just always going to have to kind of go like, I don't know, probably, but why don't you aim higher first? Like, why 170? There's nothing magic about that.
Yeah. Don't let other constraints within your or other goals within your life prevent you from going to Yale. Don't let, oh, I got to apply this fall. And so that means I have to take the test in September and I have to get a 170 by then. And then limiting yourself to 170 because you've limited yourself in these other ways.
Yeah. And then end up doing like a, yeah, okay. So I'll go to some other school in the top 14 or what, you know, like I don't want to shit on Georgetown, but it's like.
Well, going there and also not going for free necessarily, like maybe getting. Like kind of mediocre scholarships.
Yeah.
Because 170 in the top, even with a 4.0 at the top schools, I don't think the scholarships are great. Some are great. What are they? I'm going to look.
170, 4.0.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best full ride on the estimator with a 170 and a 4.0?
The best full ride is rank 6, University of Penn.
Okay.
Pennsylvania Law. That's pretty good, but
yeah, it's really good. What if we change that to a 175?
Now you're looking at the University of Chicago Law School and right. Columbia full ride.
Yeah. Chicago, which just climbed up into the top 3, basically by giving scholarships to, you know, like the elite of the elite. And 170 is elite in a way, but it's not the elite of the elite. You know, high 170s, Jason, I think, is what you should really ideally be targeting here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question.
Yeah. If I sign up for the LSAT Demon, will I almost certainly reach my target score?
I'd be shocked if you don't make it from 160 to 170. You know, not necessarily in 70 days, though. But, like, I can't imagine. Jason definitely has the horsepower. Jason definitely has the work ethic. Jason wants to follow our advice. Jason's listening to the podcast already and, you know, really trying to adopt our recommendations. How does he not make it to 170?
Yeah. And I would encourage you to try live. I think you're the perfect candidate to benefit the most from the Demon. So
yeah, 1 month of the live program and see how that goes. And then you can downgrade it later to self-study if you need to study for longer. But man, $295, I feel like we're going to remove so many obstacles for that $295. Like there's got to be all kinds of weird things that you're thinking about this test. And we're going to correct those immediately to make your study time more efficient.
Next question. What other advice do you have for me so I cannot pay for law school?
Get the best LSAT you can and apply on September 1st.
And apply broadly.
And apply broadly, yeah.
Well, he's taking the September LSAT.
So maybe don't apply this cycle. If you really want to, you know, hey, he said his primary goal is to not pay for law school. It is entirely possible that Jason will get a scholarship this cycle. I mean, certainly he'll get scholarships somewhere this cycle if he applies in, you know, early October.
Yeah.
The problem, Jason, is that you won't know what your very best offers might have been if you had applied at the very beginning of the cycle. But maybe I'm being too much of a purist on this issue.
I mean, just make sure to apply broadly and apply early so that the second that September score drops, everything should be ready.
Yep. And then be willing to walk away, you know, be willing to push it another cycle if necessary. Because, boy, if you had another year, then it would be like a shoe-in. Like, just
yeah, no-brainer. And I agree. And I don't want the September score to become the final score because it's September. Right? Like, Jason's going to get a 173 in September, but have the potential to get a 178.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, yeah, again, compromise because you're trying to meet these other goals that are not as important.
And have opportunities to go to some of the very best law schools in the entire country if he just got a few more points. And he could have like, well, my high practice test score was a 177. But, you know, 173, that's a good score. It meets my goal of 170. So I want to apply this cycle. So I'm going to apply now. And it's like, really, dude, because you could have gone to Yale.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have gone to a school like Chicago on a full ride. Yeah, I mean, if you get a full ride, those GI Bill benefits can, in some cases, transfer over to your kids or other people in your family. And just because you've got them doesn't mean you have to spend them. The law schools are willing to give you full rides if you have the right number.
And that also means that you're now in the top of your class or much more likely to end up in the top of your class at those schools. So a full scholarship isn't just about the money.
Yeah. Also, if you shoot for September LSAT as you're like one and done, that's the day. You decrease your chances of getting your best score on that day.
Because it has so much more weight, right?
It just, yeah, you end up not treating it like it's just another practice test. You end up, you know, building this like anxiety bomb for yourself because you're putting all your eggs in the September basket. And you could potentially avoid that, Jason, by just being willing to lengthen that timeline a little bit and say, well, no, I'm taking it in September and October and November and potentially twice more next summer if I need to, and have my applications ready to go day one of the next cycle. And then, you know, slam dunk, go to law school for free at a really top school too.
Yep.
With me today, I have David Kopp. David is a former Demon student, former Demon teacher, and current law student. David, how have you been? It feels like it's been forever.
It has been. Thanks for having me on, Nathan. Yeah, so just finished up my first year at the University of Texas law school. So happy to be back interacting with you and sharing some knowledge with your listeners, because it was such a big help to me.
Yeah, we have an email today from Nico asking about advice for going to law school while being in the reserves for the military. And David, you have experience with that, so we'll get into that in a second. But first, how was 1L?
So it was challenging. It was difficult. Just for context, too, first semester of law school, I was still doing my LSAT tutoring, and I was also in the reserves as well. So lots of time constraints on first semester, but grades went well first semester. So over winter break, we had the madness of basically winter OCI for the summer. And so I was fortunate enough to do pretty well with that. I got a couple of interviews, and I'm working at a big law summer associateship this summer. Second semester was also challenging. The reserve obligation did take up a lot more time. So I actually had to, you know, discontinue working with LSAT Demon, which was a bummer. But yeah, it took about almost like a week and a half of school time, 2 weeks really. So that was quite challenging. But I'm here. I've been working at the law firm for about 5 weeks now, and I'm really loving it.
Yeah. What do you love about it?
So obviously it'll be different for each one, that each different law firm that you go to. So there is this kind of perception that depending on which law firm you go to over the summer, it'll be almost like an adult summer camp where mm-hmm. you're not really doing a lot of substantive work. And it's kind of, you're with a group of almost up to maybe 30 summer associates.
Fancy lunches and that sort of thing.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. 100%. Lots of drinks. Uh-huh. But the law firm that I'm working at, I've gotten to do a lot of really cool work. A couple of like first impression issues in the state of Texas on different projects. So it's real substantive work. I'm actually trying to figure out, you know, oh, I do like this, or no, I don't like this practice group. So it's giving me a much better foundation for what I want to do next, rather than going through law school, having no idea what actual lawyer life is like, and then getting slapped in the face once I graduate. So the partners and the associates have been really helpful. The feedback's been pretty good. And I've actually been able to rotate through a lot of different practice groups.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Is it too early to start thinking about the next summer?
No, it is not. Because for us, at least at the University of Texas, we put in our bids for next summer next week. So for context, it is June 24th. And we start submitting bids at the end of June for next summer. The law firms will review all of those bids in July, and then official August, official OCI for next summer is the first week of August. However, there is a whole lot of what they call dirty interviewing going on right now, where that's law students, summer associates Wow. reaching out to law firms even before OCI, even before, you know, resume drops, interview scheduling, where it's just people reaching out to law firms themselves, kind of working the background to get interviews before OCI even pops up.
That's wild. A full year. I mean, it's almost a full year in advance Yes. anyway, but then there's the back channel dirty interviewing that's going on, like, actually Yes. a full year ahead of time.
Yes. Is actually one full year out.
Wow. Amazing. Have you already started doing that, or are you allowed to say?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I've gone full dirty interviewing. I've just been talking to like people I know personally at law firms and uh-huh. just kind of checking in on those connections. My general understanding is that it is a much more important thing to do if you want really big like networks. So you're talking like New York, DC, Chicago, like if you want to get into those types of high-end law firms, that's really, really important. But maybe if you're looking for lower end markets, then it's not nearly as important.
Cool. Do you know where you want to be? Are you figuring out where you want to like stay, where you want to live, where you want to practice?
I really, really like Austin, Texas. It's kind of a great combination of it offers a lot of the things of a big city, but it's not quite the craziness of New York or Chicago or DC yet. But because of all the crazy amount of business that's coming here, it's absolutely booming as a legal industry. The amount of tech work here is incredible. And with all the, since Austin is the capital, anything that has to do with a Texas administrative or regulatory agency, law firms in Texas are the ones that specialize in dealing with those entities. So, and with all these companies coming from, you know, either California or New York, they have to deal with Texas regulations. So they reach out specifically to Austin law firms on, okay, what do we need to do to set up shop in Texas? So
gotcha.
And cost of living is cheaper. And Austin is considered a big law market salary. So you get the big law pay, but without paying for New York City rent.
Totally. Wow. Awesome, David. Sounds like you're thriving. Do you want to read this email that we got here from Nico for us?
Yeah. Hello. I'm reaching out to see if you have any advice or possibly know anyone who has gone through law school while being in the reserves for the military. I am attempting to find any help on deciding what my path should be. I know it is advised not to work while in law school, but I think the one weekend a month that is required of reserves could be doable. Of course, I have no experience in law school, so I could be 100% wrong. Thank you for your time. So, thanks for that great question, Nico. So I'll give you a little bit of background and then kind of dive into the question. So I was active duty in the Marine Corps for about 4.5 years before I made the transition to law school. So I did have that active duty experience. And also, I would say it would depend too on when you're going into the reserves. Is this going to be, do you have active duty experience? Do you have familiarity with your job, your responsibilities, or are you coming straight into the reserves and you're about to just actually start your kind of military career? I was pretty familiar with my job, my responsibilities. So I knew that if I did make the transition, it wouldn't be nearly as challenging as if you're trying to get off from the ground from it. Also, the big thing to think about is your reserve unit close? Can you get a reserve unit that is close to where your law school is? So my reserve unit is actually in North Carolina. So I have to travel every month, which adds a decent amount of time on the front end and the back end. And with flights and everything that's crazy too, sometimes that adds more challenges, takes up more time. There have been times where I didn't get back on time. So it's, you know, I'm getting back at like 2 a.m. on Monday morning and I have law school class on right away. So that's kind of something to consider too is, or is it just like a 1 hour drive to your reserve unit? So that's something to consider. The other thing too is, have you been working? Do you have experience? Like, are you fairly good with time management skills? Can you like very easily break down what you need to do, when you need to do it, and how you need to do it? Because that's going to become very important and very critical in deciding that. Right before I got out, I was I had technically two jobs in my Marine Corps unit, and I was doing LSAT tutoring at the same time. So I was pretty comfortable with a pretty busy and hectic schedule, managing different responsibilities. So it wasn't necessarily that big of a difference for me, but I know that for a lot of people, coming to law school is a completely different requirement. They haven't had anything like it. And so for them, managing all of this all at once might be something different. But if you feel comfortable with your time management skills, then it is something that can help you out. Kind of a plus for it on the fact is it's a great a conversation piece in interviews, and it instantly gives you some credibility. Quite a few of the interviews that I had over winter break were, oh, wow, how do you manage being in law school and the reserves? And so it gave me an opportunity to showcase my abilities and something very easily to talk about. So on that side, it is kind of a really big plus, but giant asterisk, if you don't get the grades, it doesn't matter what you say in your interviews, at least for big law on going after that first summer job. And then secondly, find out like what your actual schedule is going to look like. First semester wasn't nearly as bad. It was pretty much like actually just the weekend requirement And so that wasn't the worst thing to build into my schedule. Second semester got way worse. There was one period where I had a drill period from Monday to Sunday. So it was 6 full days. And so I'm missing 5 days of classes. And keeping up with the law school reading and everything like that, and your writing assignment is hard enough, then you're gone for 5 days. And so I wasn't even like in a hotel, or we were actually going out to the field. So I couldn't watch Zoom lectures when I got back for the end of the evening. I kind of like tried to split up my reading of what I was going to do. I did a massive buildup on the front end, at least as much as I could. Problem is, some professors are great at giving you what you're going to read and some aren't. So all the ones that had the assignments pre-planned, I read those out. The other two ones were like, well, I'm not sure how far we'll get each day, so I can't give you a reading list. It's like, that's massively inconvenient.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's really challenging, because then you come back, you miss 5 days, you have to watch all of your lectures, or you might not have to, but that is a possibility, and you're absolutely scrambling. This was after our final writing memo brief had just dropped too. So everyone's talking about where they are in the brief, and I'm like, I haven't even looked at anything yet. And so that was like a real big challenge. And so your reserve schedule could also be kind of a hindrance. And then lastly, like, look into both your general commands feelings about school requirements, and then also what your school thinks about it. For instance, I had technically drill scheduled for the reserves both in December's like final time period and May. And so with that, I wasn't quite frankly willing to like mess with that at all. And so I just reached out to my reserve unit and said, hey, I have finals this week. Can I get this rescheduled for another time? They considered finals to be a good enough reason to move it. And so I got that done, and that was pretty easy. And then second, like the second part of that is, what is your school's general feeling on this? If you have to miss something important, can you get either an extension or an approved absence for something? Thankfully, all of my professors were really easily to work with. I notified them of my schedule ahead of time, told them I'd be gone this day. They thanked me for it. Like, oh, thanks for giving me the heads up. Yes, I'll be sure that like all of my lectures are recorded on Zoom. And so that was nice. I didn't have to go through the school. Now, I know, though, that some professors, not the University of Texas, but I know at some law schools, some professors aren't exactly as nice. And so in that case, you have to go through the Dean of Student Affairs to get official excused absences. And that can be kind of a pain to deal with, but it should be considered as an excused absence. But thankfully, I didn't have to deal with that. The professors were great. The school was great. And because of how long I was gone, I was even given an extension to turn in my memo a couple days later, which really, really helped me out. But you have to be proactive with that. As soon as you get your dates, let your professors know, let the school know. Because if you just drop this on the final day of like, oh, hey, I was gone all these days, can I get an extension? That's probably not going to go over very well. Versus once I found out my schedule for school in January, I let everyone know and I got my extensions already pre-approved. So like, those would be my big things to consider. Do you have experience in the field? Do you kind of know what you're getting into? What's your unit like? What's your schedule with them like? And then are you willing to sacrifice also as well, like school time? Like, quite frankly, if I'm being totally honest, my grades second semester weren't as good as first semester. And that's because I had more competing responsibilities. Now, I was willing to personally take the hit for that, and it still worked out well for me. But if grades are like your absolute number one priority in life, that nothing is more important than that, then this might not be the path for you. But I would say it certainly is doable. You just have to have your life pretty planned out, and then also like think about, are these priorities worth it?
Yeah. Am I right that second semester grades don't matter quite as much as first semester grades because of the fact that the first summer OCI happens before Yes. second semester grades are even out?
Yes, 100%. That's definitely true. So, and they, because of that, they pump out grades really, really fast. At the end of the first semester, I think they turned ours out in about 3.5 weeks. And so, I mean, you take your finals, and then our break was like a month long. Some other law schools aren't that long. And so for some people, you're doing like your interviews in between your classes when you get back and everything like that. But it was, you know, semester ends, waited about 3.5 weeks, got our grades, did all of our interviews because they wanted to do the grade check first. But then once second semester rolls around, like you've already got at least big asterisks. My experience is all applying for big law. I didn't apply for public interest. I didn't apply to government. So I don't necessarily have the experience with that. But if you were going in big law, you had your law job lined up in January. And so I started in May and then my grades came out about 2 weeks ago. And my law firm just simply asked, hey, can you just send us your updated grades? So definitely not nearly as big of a deal. You just need to get your foot in the door from your first semester grades.
How big is your firm?
It's, I think, about total like 800 attorneys like worldwide. This office has about 40 to 50.
I see. Are you the only UT summer that's there, or are there other people from your school?
We have 4 summer associates in the Austin office. 3 of them were from the University of Texas. 1 of them was from the University of Houston.
Okay. Do you know, did that person like completely kill it at University of Houston?
Yes, 100%. That's like another thing to think about is at the University of Texas, quite frankly, I didn't have to be at the top of my class to get a big law summer job. Generally here, it was if you were in like the top 35%, you were pretty safe to get the big law job. Mm-hmm. Because we have a much better ranking. We mm-hmm. have the better reputation. But at the University of Houston, it is a smaller school. So you do need the better grades. You need to be at the top of your class.
Yeah. I mean, you still, it's not like you're like casually mentioning that you're in the top 35% at Texas. And that's a tougher field to compete against than the field is going to be at Houston. So that's another thing that people have to bear in mind. It's like, well, yeah, they do hire. I mean, they still, the big law firms are still only hiring the top third of the class, even at Texas, or it's safe in the top third of the class. Maybe they hire down a little bit further. But then, yeah, so that's, it's still no guarantee, right?
100%. Yeah.
And my advice there would be like, yeah, that's a bet that if I was going to have to pay, I probably wouldn't do it. I'd probably just say, nah, I'll take the scholarship to Houston and then try to just finish top of my class. Because if I'm paying, you know, $60,000 a year or whatever it is at UT, and then I still have to finish in the top third of my class, I don't know. Yeah. That's just a risky business there.
Yeah.
Awesome, David. Any other tips for Nico? I mean, this was, really excellent advice.
I would just say, like, just one more point on grades. If you don't get those perfect grades first semester, it's not the end of the world for you. There is chances to recover. Like, that's just the top third. That's for 1L. Summer jobs, like 2L summer jobs, it drops down a decent amount of what your grades need to be. And generally, if you didn't do very well first semester, you will do a lot better second semester because you know what law school wants, you know how they test. And so that can be more comfortable to you. And then, you know, just go find a summer job that you actually really like and you get to do work. Because if you actually want to be a like good lawyer, a hard hitting attorney, which would you rather do, work at like a legal clinic or something like that where you actually get to deal with day in, day out clients, or someone who goes to adult summer camp parties, doesn't really actually learn anything about the law,
right?
And then gets the real awakening once they graduate? Which one do you think is actually better long term? So while everyone's freaking out about the short term, the immediate thing, take a step back. Think about what you really want in life. What do you want your next, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years to look like? And then like that really can help relieve a lot of the stress of feeling like you're in the total rat race. If you can have a little bit more of an objective opinion on everything that's going on.
Amazing. Thank you so much, David, for coming on. Really nice to catch back up with you. proud of you and all of your success. It's awesome to see Demon students thriving. So yeah, thank you for being willing to share your time and help us out.
Yeah, of course, Nathan. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
With me today is Jennifer Oliphant. Jennifer is a former LSAT Demon student, and she is here to talk about how to be a successful LSAT Demon student. How are you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Maybe you could just tell a little bit of your story. I don't know, your background, where you, when you first started thinking about the LSAT, how your LSAT prep went. I mean, you just go. It's on you.
So I guess 2021, I was just thinking about what my next step in my life would be. And my youngest is getting ready to start school. And I always wanted to go to law school, but it just didn't seem like something that made sense for us, for our life. Mm-hmm. And then as we were looking at this new chapter in our life, I thought, you know, everything else that I look at that I want to do doesn't make sense to me. I love school. I love learning. If I could just be a professional student, that's what I would do. And my brother-in-law, who's a lawyer, said, you really should look into law school. And I thought, that's interesting, because that's something I wanted to do when I was much younger. And so I looked into it and thought, yeah, that sounds like something I really could enjoy doing, which I guess makes me weird. But I figured the first step would be to take the LSAT and see what I could do there. I started listening to your podcast in October, which is when I, not knowing anything, just took the LSAT in October. I had practiced for, I want to say, like 2 months with Khan Academy, and just took the LSAT in October. I started listening to your podcast about a week before I took it and thought, wow, I really should not have signed up for this. I don't know what I'm doing, but I just went ahead and took it. Everybody seems to talk about the LSAT like it's just the most important thing ever. And it's just so hard, and you have to be so serious about it, and you have to be so strict. And it just psyched me out so much. And when I like, this is the most important test you'll ever take in your entire life. And so when I actually took the test, I mean, my heart was pounding. I was like shaking and felt like I couldn't even think straight because I was so stressed out about it. And so as soon as I finished it, I thought, I'm going to take this again. I don't know when I'm going to take it again. But I signed up for the Demon Free account, and I started through all of that material and just thought, where has this been? Like, where was this approach? It's just so straightforward. There's nobody was having me go through into like formal reasoning and contrapositives. And I mean, I could figure that out. I kind of understood what they said, but it just seemed like extra steps I didn't need to take. That was just more often than not confusing me. And so once I started with LSAT Demon, things started to really click with me. I started to get games. I still really sucked at them. But I could complete the games. And if I had unlimited amount of time, I could get them all right, but it would take me like an hour and a half, but at least I knew where to start. I knew what I was doing. I wish that I had started with the live account. Is that the
live is the top level of subscription where you get all the live classes? Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had started with that. I had the mindset that I would do the basic. And then once I got through with that, I would move up. And then right before I took the LSAT again in February, about a month before that, I started a premium account. And I went to a class with you and asked you a question about games or something. I don't even remember what my question was, but you just said to me to read the whole prompt in the LSAT games. Before I start writing anything down, just read the entire thing all the way through and understand it. And that was a complete game changer for me. That changed everything, because I had been just, because I think what it was is I started, once I started diagramming, once I started writing stuff down, I felt like I didn't have any more flexibility in my brain. Like I would think I knew where it was going, and I would have it kind of, I'd even go to the point of writing it on paper, like, oh, this is going to do this, or I'm going to put this over here and this over here. And then I would get to the end and I'd already put everything in its place. But if I read it all the way through first, then I had the mental flexibility to adjust the way I looked at the game. And so I went from reading it and writing as I go to reading it all the way through once, and then thinking about it for a second, reading it again and diagramming. And it changed everything for me. That 2 weeks was like so much change for me just in logic games. And I feel like if I had started with live, I might have benefited from being able to ask questions and being able to get little things like that, and used all of that through all of my practicing instead of practicing on my own and then getting a tip right before I took the test.
Yeah, that's our general advice, is that if you're not sure, right, if you're going to do the self-study options, you know, the basic or the premium account for a while, and you're going to do the live account for a while with all of the live classes on Zoom, we always recommend people do the live first. So just like try 1 month of live, come to a bunch of classes, ask us a whole bunch of questions. And I do think that you'll have moments like that where we just change your whole way of approaching the test. And then if you decide to downgrade to basic or to premium and just use it as a self-study tool, now you'll have a much better foundation and you'll get more out of your time, more out of your self-study.
Yeah, absolutely. I really wish I had done that. It still really worked for me, but I feel like it would have been more linear progress. Like I would have progressed a lot faster, and I would have felt more confident with it if I had started.
So you took the official test in February?
Yes, I took the official test in February and I got a 177.
Wow.
It was super exciting. Kind of blew my mind a little bit, but it opened the whole world for me. So now I'm trying to figure out what I actually want to do. Instead of thinking like, could I go to law school? The question is like, what law school do I want to go to? And what full ride scholarship do I want to take? Which is just a completely different world that I'm in now. Yeah, it's exciting and kind of overwhelming to have options. I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm super grateful, but it is a little overwhelming.
It's a good problem to have, you know. It's always a happy. I can feel the stress from people when they're looking at all their offers and they're like, "Now what do I do? I've got $1 million of scholarship offers on the table. Now what do I do?" And it's like, well, you know, you're gonna have to turn down 900,000 of those dollars. But
I never imagined that would be my problem to have. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
And okay. I don't think that I'm anything special. I really don't. I think that the things that I got from LSAT Demon that really changed things for me was, first of all, like the attitude towards the LSAT. The couple of months leading up to taking the test in February and listening to the podcast, listening to you guys just talk about the LSAT, like it's just no big deal. It's just a test. It's not that big of a deal. And the mantra of like, it's just another practice test. It's not a book. I can just take it again. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That changed everything for me. It seems like that's an unusual attitude in this space. And it changed everything for me. I feel like maybe some people need to make the LSAT seem like bigger and scarier and harder than it is because it justifies their existence. Maybe, I don't know. I'm making stuff up, but the attitude of just the LSAT's just the LSAT. It's just another test. It doesn't determine my value as a person. And even if I screw up the test, I'll just take it again. It's not a big deal.
I mean, I say both things, right? I say all the time that the LSAT is easy and that it should be a fun, easy game for you. And eventually you got to that point, right, Jennifer? It was a fun, easy game on the day of the test. I say that. And I say, it's just another practice test and it's no big deal and don't give the test too much power. But it's also a fact that it is probably the most important test you'll ever take in your entire life. And it is worth $100,000 or more and the full launch trajectory of your legal career. I mean, it's super, super important. But nonetheless, law schools only care about your highest score. The content of the test itself is pretty easy once you like realize that it's easy. And if they only care about your highest one, then you've got, you know, 5 shots at it. So there's no value in like making it a stress bomb that it doesn't need to be.
Yeah. And that was so helpful for me. I think that changed a lot for me. And just the idea that I could just spend an hour every day. I would get up before my kids and study and focus. And then I would just let it go. I had to do that with the games. I had to be nobody in the room with me, really focused. Yeah. With the logical reasoning, that was always my best section to begin with. But I would practice that a lot when I was you know, waiting in my car for a prescription or something like that, I would pull up the app on my phone or the website and practice that. And then I would just think about it and toss around the explanations. I read the explanations or watched the videos every time, even if I wasn't 100% sure and I knew why I was right, I would read it or watch the video.
Did you ever use the ask button?
I did a couple times. Yeah. And most of the time the answer was, we'll read it closely. I think you missed the word. And then I would feel really stupid and be like, oh yeah, if I had read three more paragraphs, I would have realized what my problem was because you already answered my question. But everybody was super polite and super nice about it. But usually it was just me failing to read carefully.
Hey, I for 15 years, I've half of what I say is read it again. No, that's not what that says. It's not what that means. Read it again. Oh yeah, you got it. And then they're like, what? That's all there is to it. Yeah, that's all there is to it. It's easy, really.
And I could play logic games every day. Like that went to something that almost gave me a panic attack when I would start to read it to being something that I would do for fun. It's like Wordle or I don't know, other games like that. Like it's genuinely super fun.
100%.
I don't think I ever in a million years would have gotten there without the demon.
Amazing. Any advice for demon students?
Be honest with yourself, I think. I think you can make yourself really comfortable by telling yourself, oh, yeah, I got that. Or oh, I just misread that. Or I don't know, like little things that we do to comfort ourselves that it was just this or it was just that. I think learning how to be like kind to yourself, but at the same time, brutally honest. Like I should have read that correctly. I need to do better next time instead of kind of giving yourself a pass. Like, oh, I just misread it. It's no big deal. If I'd read it, I would have gotten it right.
Yeah.
But like, of course, if I'd read it correctly, I'd get it right. But I didn't read it correctly. And that's the problem. And I need to address that as an actual problem. I found myself being a little dishonest to myself in the beginning. And, and sometimes it felt like when I listened to your podcast, like you guys were talking directly to me, like, I don't know, like stop your bullshit. And I'd be like, oh, fine. but it worked. I appreciate it. I mean, I needed someone to call me out on it. So I found it super, super helpful.
That's awesome. Anything else?
I love the worlds in games. If people haven't experienced doing games using worlds, man, start there. That's a total paradigm shift. But if you've used any other, because it's just so easy. It just, you don't even have to think about the rules anymore. It's just, you know, everything else that I had used to learn games was, you know, diagramming so many things and like writing down the contrapositive, like if, I don't know, if this book is on the top shelf, then this book is on the second shelf. Well, once that book is on the top shelf, you know, if it's not on the top shelf, you don't even have to think about that anymore. You don't need to make a whole diagram for when it's not on that top shelf. You just let it go. You know, I don't know if that made any sense, but man, worlds just simplifies everything so much. You only have to write down what matters. And it was a total game changer for me because my biggest problem with games before worlds really clicked for me was that my diagrams were too complicated. I had too much to look at because I had, you know, I had a diagram for every possible scenario, it seems like, and worlds just simplified it. It was really easy to look at. I spent a little bit more time making it because I was really precise in making my diagrams.
Good.
But once those were made, man, the questions were just instant. I mean, I knew it. I knew the game. I could answer the questions right away. So if anybody's listening and they haven't really figured out worlds, I think that is worth your time. It's worth your attention. Watch the videos, go to the classes about world building. It is like that changed everything for me. I think I've said that like 10 times, but I had a lot of changing happening over the course of those months, lots of paradigm shifting. It was pretty fantastic.
That's amazing. Well, you did all the work, Jennifer. I mean, we guided you to seeing how easy it actually is. But you're the one who, you know, showed up every day and did the practice. You know, even if it's only an hour a day, you did it every day and kept coming back and kept making progress. And also that, you know, you mentioned it earlier, the calling yourself on your own bullshit, right? Being honest with yourself, saying, well, hey, Jennifer, is today going to be the day that you're going to stop misreading things? Because one of these days, if you want to get these points, if you want to get it right, not wrong, you have to stop misreading it. And you're the one that did that. We couldn't do that for you. So congratulations, Jennifer.
We have an email here from Jordan.
Jordan says, hey guys, I've been experiencing a very large discrepancy in my timed score versus my blind review score. You know, Ben, do you even have, do you care? Do you have people do a blind review score? No, because that means you're retaking the whole test. Yeah, that's not even a demon thing. So you're already like worrying about something that we just wouldn't even look at this, Jordan. Under time conditions, I score around 157. Okay, so you're scoring 157 on your practice tests. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. During blind review, I score about 171. I don't care. That means nothing to me.
Well, there's so many problems with it too, because it's like when you're blind reviewing a question, there's a very real possibility that...
You've already fucking read it. Yeah. You've already seen it. Look at this next thing. Jordan goes, I zoom through the questions during blind review, so I do not think the time restraint is part of the problem. It's the pressure and anxiety that comes with the clock that's giving me problems.
No, you're already
what?
Fluent in the ideas that were expressed to you.
What are you talking about? You've already read those questions. It's easier to read something that you have already previously read.
Absolutely.
That's just goofy. We would never tell someone to redo an entire test after they've already done it timed. Anyway, Jordan continues, even though I'm being timed, my thoughts get cloudy. Sorry, every time I am being timed, my thoughts get cloudy and start to race. I have bad anxiety and I was granted an extended time accommodation. This has helped, but my mind remains cloudy during timed practice. Sometimes I have to read the same sentence 3 or 4 times before I am able to comprehend it. Check this out. Under blind review, I read the same sentence once and I fully understand it.
Yeah, but you just read it. So now you've read it 5 times.
You've already read it 3 or 4 times, Jordan. That's your 4th or 5th time.
Oh my gosh.
That's comedy. Any advice? Yeah, stop doing this. Just stop doing you don't need to blind review full sections. That's not even a thing. It's just, what even is that? It's not a thing. A blind review of a test is just not a thing. It's not. That's
it's a
not
thing
the
only
LSAT.
Because people do it foolishly.
I know.
But
it's so worthless. It doesn't. We don't ever ask anybody to do that. It's a waste of your time. It's giving you these false ideas about what your problem is. Jordan, your problem is that you don't read slowly and carefully enough in the first place.
Well, and Jordan has the wrong goal, right? Like if Jordan's had a
trying
different
to finish,
goal,
it sounds like.
Yeah. So Jordan, your goal is to get the highest percentage correct you can get on the ones you attempt. So if you attempt 10 questions and you get 10 of them correct, you have gotten 100%. And I will congratulate you
air
as much
five.
As you want. Yep. Yeah. Air high five right now. That you got 100%, right? And so you control how many questions you do in your, what now, maybe 53 minutes. I don't know what time accommodation you got, but in your 53 minutes, you can choose how many questions you're going to do. And that's up to you.
To be clear.
Yeah.
Don't choose how many questions you're going to do. That's not literally what we mean. What we mean instead is do one question at a time, actually understand it, feel good about your answer, get it right. Then do another one and just calmly continue with that same process until time is up. So do not try to finish the section. Do not have a goal of how many questions you're going to attempt. Do one at a time. As far as this 3 to 4 times reading a sentence, any thoughts about that?
Well, I'm glad that Jordan is reading the same sentence as opposed to the entire passage.
But
maybe you need to break it down even more and read the first half of the sentence.
Yeah.
I think if your goal changes though, this cloudiness will go away. You're rereading these sentences multiple times precisely because you're cloudy and you're thinking about the time and you're thinking about finishing and you need to stop doing that. But don't fret if you end up reading a sentence three times with a clear head. Sometimes you have to do that to really understand that sentence.
But if you're doing it sometimes, all the times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the one hand, Ben and I will sometimes read a sentence three or four times in order to really understand what it's saying, because we insist on understanding what we read. And some of this shit is intentionally written in the most convoluted way possible. So we might have to do that sometimes. But if I slow down and I read the first half of that sentence better, or if I stop and reread the first half of that sentence, then the second half of the sentence might click and I might end up only reading it once or twice instead of reading the whole sentence three or four times. But yeah, don't worry about it. Just calm down and focus on accuracy. Anything else for Jordan?
No, thanks for writing in and good luck. Give us an update after you try this.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. We'd like to know what happens when you stop blind reviewing your whole section. It just seems like it's a pen. How long does that take? That's such a big waste of time.
Oh, well, he's breezing through it, so.
He's breezing through it because he already did it. Yeah. We have an email here from Jacob.
Jacob says, LSAT Demon team, it's been a privilege studying over the course of the past couple of months, semicolon. I appreciate your sharing, essentially gratis. Gratis? What does that mean?
Free. Free. It's Latin.
Ah, yes. Such a large amount of your personal insight into this test and enhancing that delivery by way of these daily comic interludes. Okay. Glad they're entertaining. I'm writing with a question that's been asked before, but it's a variation on the prior student's question, or maybe it's not. You tell me, I suppose. As of the end of this long weekend, I will have completed substantially all of the LSAC released materials. This includes review of right answers, wrong answers, and everything in between. My trailing five test average is currently a 175.6. And I basically only ever lose points on games as a result of guessing on the final two or three items each time. I would be pretty happy with a 175 plus or minus standard error score if I could just take the test today, but I'll be scared of losing momentum if I don't practice more, especially more games. The last few points in that section are, in my neediest gaze, the ultimate low-hanging fruit. I've never heard that phrase, in my neediest gaze.
I don't know. I'm picturing him starving to death, salivating, looking up at the low-hanging fruit.
Man, you're adding to my daily comic interlude. Okay, that's cool. I just don't want to end up doing something stupid in my inevitably restive state.
He misspelled inevitably, or he typoed it. Restive, I'm going to have to look up.
I think it means the opposite of resting, right?
I'm pretty sure. Unable to keep still or silent and becoming increasingly difficult to control, especially because of impatience, dissatisfaction, or boredom.
Okay, we got some bold coming up here. With that background, bold, would you be fine if I choose to drill with GRE logic games? This, I think, looks like Jacob includes an image below. This image is from the GRE Big Book put out in the 90s and contains 27 official ETS blessed GRE administered or GREs administered back in the day. If you glance at the sample of games just from one of these tests, you'll be able to see that they're similar to the LSAT style with some spice for variety. This is unsurprising because ETS developed this item in the first place for use in the GRE and then wrote it for LSAC under contract for a while longer until LSAC decided to start flying solo. Okay.
I never knew that. That's interesting background.
Yep. Bold. They also provide difficulty data using a sample size of 3 years of GRE subjects, about 1 million students. Okay. And these questions get an average P plus of only about 30% correct. So the difficulty seems appropriate at this stage for this purpose. P plus?
I have no idea what Jacob is talking about. They're hard. I mean, so I pasted in here a PDF or one of them.
Okay.
And you can tell at a glance that it's hard. It's got a lot going on. I mean,
yeah,
it's
there
got,
are a lot of rules, right? There's five rules listed, but then there are the paragraph introducing the game itself is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines long. Now this has a lot going on.
This is way, way harder, Jacob, than typical LSAT logic games. And I know you think that you should work on the hard stuff, the hardest stuff, but I think you should return to the 400 games, official LSAT games, because those tests, I'm sure, still have something to teach you. If nothing else, you'll just immerse yourself into the type of shit that they're going to actually ask you on the LSAT. I would especially be doing the modern tests more. I would like start over from prep test 93 and work your way backward and just do all the games. I would not go. The games in the 90s were way harder. This is way, way harder.
Prep test 93. What is that?
Prep test 93?
Yeah, that doesn't exist. Is it not a thing?
No. Oh, prep test 92, I meant.
Okay. 93 will come out eventually, but not yet.
Okay, sorry. So prep test 92, and then just work your way backward through all the old games. I don't care, like, if you want to spend some time doing these games, but, like, this is, boy, you know, I'll read a little bit of it. So we got six colored lights projected on a wall one at a time in a sequence that lasts 30 seconds. A single projection of a light lasts 6 seconds. And then, oh my God, you can't have the same color more than three times in any 30-second sequence. And this is all before we've even gotten to the actual rules. There are five of them. Two of them are conditional. I don't know. I mean, they're extra. They do look very, I mean, they look solvable. They look very logic game-y.
They do kind of feel like the older games. I feel like the older games did have a lot more rules. It's almost like they were figuring out their way back then.
They were bigger puzzles. The older games were harder. Like, they were more variables, more flexibility, but more rules.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like more moving pieces. They were like harder puzzles to solve.
Yeah.
You know, it's the difference between a typical Rubik's Cube is 3x3. But, you know, they have like 4x4 ones.
Yeah.
And they also have 2x2 ones.
I don't mind Jacob trying to solve these ones. I mean, they look so much. They do look harder, but they also look like those older games.
Don't time yourself. Don't worry about it. But if you want to work your way through these just because they're novel puzzles to solve, I think that's totally fine. I don't know. I mean, you just finished up your 400. You've said you've run through all of the official ones, but I have a feeling you could probably start over and redo those ones. And I mean, like, because the real difference, Jacob, you need to get really, really good at the easy shit. I think that's the piece that maybe this is going to distract him from. Like, the reason why you're not finishing the section is not because of the hard game at the end. It's because you didn't do well enough on the three easy games before that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the hard game has to be at the end, but usually game 3 or 4, sometimes game 2, but usually there's going to be like one that's harder than the others. Yeah. And that's not your problem. Everybody's going to take 10, 12 minutes to grind their way through that game. That game's not your problem. Your problem is that you didn't make worlds or whatever. You didn't kill it hard enough on the easy ones.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm a little bit afraid of it. If they're all like that, that's like, well, you're certainly not getting good at crushing the easy ones by working on something that hard.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jacob. Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.